Thank you, John, and good morning, everyone. Can I start by firstly acknowledging that we're assembled on the land of the traditional people, the Noongar people, which I think carries a different significance to open with that acknowledgement today. And thank you, John, for that kind introduction. As John said, I've been here once or twice before, which in one way is an advantage because you're kind of familiar with the format and how everything goes, and in some ways it's a disadvantage because you've said stuff before and people can probably remember bits of what you said. So let's go back to last year's takeaway tips. Well, I think the key messages out of last year were enjoy it while it lasts. It doesn't get any better than this. Things have gotten better since then. Capacity is being expanded and that continues to be a challenge, so that was a fair call. Watch out for inflation and wages, prices, assets, being house prices and so on, and the implications for interest rates. I think we got that one pretty much right. And plan for it not to last. That wasn't to say it won't last, but the message was plan for it not to last, then you'll be okay. So focusing on 3 years out and beyond. I think last year we did a straw poll of how long people thought conditions would stay this strong and how long the expansion or the boom, if you like, would last in Western Australia. And the sort of sentiment last year was about 3 to 4 years. So let's start at the 3 to 4 year horizon. Hands up if you think it's going to last another 3 years. Okay. 4 years. 5, 6, any longer than 6 years? Well, it's interesting because so the general consensus is still 3 to 4 years then. Maybe that's as far out as we can comfortably foresee or expect anything. All right, the theme for today is really about conflicting forces and the relationships between various variables. Which are doing some very odd things at the moment. And we could easily spend an entire day talking about the relationships between financial variables, real economic variables, the relationships between China and the US, the relationships between wages and employment. And in essence, what we're seeing and why it's such an interesting time is because the relationships, which you can see here, can be, you know, very pleasant and nice and friendly, can go to crap very quickly. And that's, in essence, what's happening in the economic scene at the moment. And the picture here is Jet and Western has just thumped Jet and about to run off, which is pretty much what financial markets have done to the US. And I think last year I actually raised the question of how long would the international financial markets and the if you like, the lending community entertain the US's appetite for debt. And we've seen that come a cropper in a fairly spectacular way because the tolerance has run out in that respect. So in the theme of, if you like, conflict, current conditions in the Western Australian economy, it's really a story of exceptional growth versus a capacity constraint. In economics 101 terms, we are at the edge, outside edge of our production possibility frontier. Does anyone remember PPFs? Yeah, a few nods. We'll have those people dealt with later. But in essence, we're producing as much as we can possibly produce given our factor inputs of labour, land, capital and so on. And what that means is in running the state at such an incredible pace, the price pressures are evident. Just to give you a sense of some of that incredible pace, real business investment in the 5 years from 2001-2002 has increased by 164%, 164% since 2001-2. Exports are starting to accelerate very dramatically, and we saw that pressure all emerge in people's hip pockets and their desire for new accommodation, better housing, also in demographics in terms of population increase. That impact on the housing market certainly cooled in the last, probably more the last 6 months, maybe to about June, July of last year. we saw the first signs. So the heat has definitely come out of the housing market. That's been manifest in price growth, which you saw spike quite incredibly in late 2006, I think it was, to falling back to something that's a lot more normal, and potentially looking at a bit of correction in prices there as well. As I mentioned, business capital expenditure has been absolutely phenomenal, and the growth in investment, not surprisingly to all of us, has been heavily dominated in the resource sector. The Western Australian mining industry accounted for almost 70% of the state's business investment and 18% of the nation's total business investment. So across a lot of these variables, whether it's business investment or exports, we are batting well above our weight. I've got mixed metaphors all over the place there, but they're the best kind, I find. We're doing more than our fair share, punching above our weight. So going to exports, you can see there the dramatic increase in exports since around 2004, 2005. There is a lot more to come there. Because of that substantial 164% increase in business investment, we are yet to see that hit full production capacity and flow through to exports. So there is a lot on the way. And that's putting that capacity, that export demand from overseas, is placing a lot of pressure on prices. And again, iron ore prices, if I'd stood up here 2 years ago and said that we'd have a quadrupling of iron ore prices, you would have just laughed at me. And you would have laughed at me, and I wouldn't have intended that to be the outcome, as opposed to other things that I might say. Incredible growth in price, really amazing. And the question is, how long will that last? At the moment, we are watching the balance between demand and supply very closely. And I'll get to US-China issues in a minute. But the supply is coming through slower than we thought, which is therefore putting pressure on price because the demand isn't easing off quite yet. There was an article in the West, I think it was Saturday. I love reading the paper on the weekend. It's just so relaxing. Speculating that the latest round of contract negotiations in iron ore price might see an increase of up to 60%. This is on the back of increases of 70%, 80% in each of the last 2 years. At the moment, our budgeting assumptions have an increase of 30%, which we thought was pretty aggressive, actually. And we thought, well, we better look across other forecasters, see what they're saying. And across the major forecasters, the average is 45% increase for current negotiations. And the range is anywhere from 23% to over 60%. So just to give you a sense of how much consensus there is among the experts in this field. Going to the outlook, in short, we think that the outlook is very robust. The fundamentals for both the Western Australian economy and for our key trade growth trade partners, particularly China, are looking very strong. I'll just take you to the bold numbers because they're the kind of the key interesting bit. You can see the business investment growth figures there, which are absolutely phenomenal. Exports, coming from a negative in 2005-06, we're looking at some very strong increases both in the current year and next year and indeed the year after. So the momentum from that production capacity that's coming through will carry into exports for some time to come. Employment growth is not one of the bolded ones because, quite frankly, it's not going to do much interesting because we're at full employment. There's not much more that can happen there. And what's happening is that's showing up in very strong wage price index growth, which is sort of the most reliable measure of wage inflation, and again showing up in inflation. And that is a real concern for, the Reserve Bank, amongst others, and those others being producers who are experiencing that very strong wage growth, but at the same time being fairly tightly constrained in terms of how much price increase they've been able to pass through to consumers. So again, the conflict. Here's the inflation story. You can see there some pretty strong growth from December 2005 through to the end of 2006, and then an easing, and then a sharp pickup. And that's probably what's really got the Reserve Bank concerned at this point, is that kind of reversal in that trend, rather than flattening out and everything being stable. is that sharp pickup, when there are a number of factors that should be having a deflationary impact on the economy. The Australian dollar, for example, should be keeping prices quite subdued, but that doesn't seem to be happening. So that is a very, very significant concern. Also of concern, probably, is that there is some pent-up producer costs that are yet to be passed through. And you can see there, from about the end of 2004, the intermediate and preliminary prices that producers were experiencing, basically what they were paying for their inputs, were growing quite a bit stronger than final good prices, which means they were basically absorbing some price increase in their margins, albeit they just grabbed a little bit in 2003 there without anyone noticing. But there's still some very significant price pressures out there. So we are not yet in safe territory by a long stretch in terms of inflation. State finances, again, an issue of a potential conflict. And talking about state finances, or thinking about state finances, is something that I do a lot of. Talking about them is kind of hard because I sort of understand them pretty well, and I know what net lending is all about and net operating balance, and I know how the cash surplus relates to the accrual net operating balance result and how that flows to net asset position and net debt and the net debt to revenue ratio of the total non-financial public sector. I kind of, you know, I've got a handle on that, I think, and well, my offsider Michael Barnes is really good at it, so if I get it wrong, I get sort of pulled into line pretty quickly. So what I've tried to do is not so much focus on the numbers. I mean, we all know that the state is running a net operating balance, or a surplus, as it's called, of around $2 billion. And that's pretty consistent. We've done that the last couple of years. We'll do it for the next couple of years. No surprises there. Pretty significant in terms of the amount of money. But what does it actually mean? Well, it's in the context of that surplus, it's in the context of a set of decisions that government has that is constrained, and it's the essential fundamental economic problem of unlimited needs and wants of the community against a limited resource. So this is what it's all about. Think of this in your own household budget framework, which, to be honest, I have trouble doing because I have no idea what my household budget's like. So here goes. The government can either spend more money, buy more, which is increasing expenses, versus foregoing some of its income, which would be cutting taxes or keeping a lid on fees and charges. So they're the basic fundamental parameters. And the balance of those decisions is what we end up with the end of the year as our savings, surplus. But essentially, that's just our savings for the year. Now, we can use those savings in a number of ways. We can use it to go on a holiday, on a household example, or you can do some extensions, that is, expand the productive functionality of your infrastructure, or you can put in a pool, which is, in essence, expanding the state's social amenity. Either way, your savings are spent on that. Or you can increase the mortgage by less. So you can use your savings to limit the expansion in your mortgage. And let's not forget, the state has a growing mortgage. Over the next 4 or 5 years, the mortgage goes up. So any savings we have through a surplus limit the amount, or are able to offset the amount by which the mortgage goes up. So the whole reason for going through that example is just to emphasise that what a surplus means. Surplus is the savings on the day-to-day running of government that can then go towards the investment in infrastructure, the investment in social amenity. It's not free money. It's not money that, you know, is just slushing around and can be spent on this, that and the other. It's a once-off saving from the year. And it has to be spent very wisely to ensure that the state's debt levels, which are projected to increase, remain consistent with AAA credit rating, which, again, has just been reaffirmed by Moody's credit rating agency, who have been highly complimentary about the state's finances. So that's kind of, hopefully you'll carry that little example in the back of your head whenever you're reading about state finances. Key message, revenue has been growing exceptionally strongly. There's no question about that. What we are seeing, though, in the end of that chart, particularly since 2003-04, is that the growth in expense has accelerated. Why is it so? Well, it shouldn't be too much of a surprise because our revenues go up because of employment growth and wages growth impacting on payroll tax receipts, for example. Employee expenses roughly account for about 40 to 50% of state government expenses. So when they're going up and bringing in revenue, they're also going up and chewing up expense, because that's one of the key costs of running our business. Similarly, royalties on commodities, whether it be iron ore, alumina, reflects increases in price. That price is reflected in increases in our inputs to our construction activity, into maintaining a power network, which is a lot of copper involved in that, maintaining water infrastructure. So the exact same parameters that are impacting on our revenue growth are now driving our expenditure as well, both on the recurrent side, or the operating side, and the capital side. So when people talk about, you know, the $2 billion surplus and say, oh, you've got plenty of money, well, we've got plenty of pressures as well. And just reflecting on those pressures, that's the increase in the mortgage that I flagged previously, which in the context of a record capital works program is projected to grow fairly significantly, and the mid-year review numbers that we released in around Christmas time cover that story quite well. Going to the question of should we forego some income, pretty topical one at the moment, the question of tax competitiveness has been one that's been debated fairly hotly over the last 6 months or so, and this is the share of the state's income. When I think about tax, I think about how much of my income goes to tax. This is that measure on a state basis. What it highlights is that we're below the average of other states, and I went through the various tax measures and tried to get a sense of what does that really mean. Well, payroll tax, our rate is below New South Wales and Tasmania, and our threshold that it kicks in is above that of New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia. So in essence, we're pretty competitive on payroll tax. And certainly when the economy is performing the way it is at the moment, it's hard to mount an argument that payroll tax is holding things back, because we're at full capacity. On conveyance, the government has introduced the most generous first homeowner exemptions in the country, and currently has a bill before Parliament which would see a further 5% reduction in conveyance rates. Land tax, the amount payable in Western Australia is generally lower than all other jurisdictions until you get to an amount of land values of up to 10 million. Has anyone got a property worth more than 10 million? So we're probably paying less on that case. Cars, bit of argument on cars, mainly on stamp duty. We're probably a bit higher than others, but on our running costs day to day, like third party insurance and licensing, we're a lot lower than other jurisdictions. And with stamp duty on vehicles, there's a couple of cuts on the way as well. That's probably enough on tax, other than to say we don't have this one in a big way, and I think that's a very good thing. Sales of goods and services. This is really where government has focused on keeping the impost on all of us as low as possible through keeping its measure of the household impact of fees and charges like power, water, transport fees below the rate of inflation. And that has been quite a substantial effort, which to an extent goes a little bit unnoticed. WA is the only state that runs a household model kind of framework for this, for the setting of fees and charges, and seeks to ensure on a policy basis that those charges are kept as low as possible. And reflecting that, our average residential electricity tariff is substantially below the national average. I won't say anything more about electricity charges. Infrastructure. I will leave this largely to the Premier in his lunchtime address. There's a whole heap of projects on the go, and I think very few of us really appreciate the amount of work that is underway across WA public sector in terms of infrastructure expansion. And we can see there the pace of expansion has been quite substantial. The challenge for us is to keep up and deliver value for money for you. And there are a number of initiatives in place to achieve that, which go to issues of project management assessment of value for money through production, through construction projects and so on. All right, another point of conflict, tightening versus easing pressures in monetary policy. Here's the credit figures. As you can see, business credit has gone through the roof, annual change of around 25% recently. And in terms of conflict, interest rates going all over the place. The US, you can see there, which is the red line, easing dramatically after a pretty sustained and consistent period of tightening since February 04 or thereabouts. Australia and New Zealand kind of out by themselves in a tightening mode. I did flag last year that a concern, I guess, that we had probably a generation of mortgage holders that had never lived through an interest rate cycle, and a concern that that might come with a more severe impact than previously expected, or that otherwise might be anticipated. My people, as they often do, heard me say that and then ran around to try and see whether or not what I just sprouted was actually valid or not. And here's what they came up with. The get you to focus on, firstly, the blue bar, which is household indebtedness. So that's risen dramatically since about 2000. The orange line is the ratio of interest payments to household disposable income. And it kind of looks pretty innocuous, although it's gone up a bit. What that highlights for me, though, is many of us who are had mortgages, although I didn't, but I can remember it, back in the late 80s, remember how hard that episode was in terms of the impact of the tightening cycle. We now have an impact in terms of household income, disposable income, from interest rates, which is greater than that. So the impact of 18% interest rates back in the late 80s, you can see there, was taking about 10% of household disposable income. When you take into account the amount of debt that people had, when you run that same scenario now, it's up around 12%. Something to bear in mind, and also something to be considered, and I think it's going to be an issue throughout this year. Obviously, the federal government has come in and it has a social responsibility to deliver on its election commitments, and you know, people voted for tax cuts. But in the context of an inflationary environment and in the context of that chart on the impact of increased interest rates and the nature of the impact being very regressive, that is, it hits lower-income people much harder as a proportion of their income, from a policy perspective, we need to think very carefully about whether or not fiscal stimulus is actually the right way to go. And in fact, traditional theory would suggest that we should be looking at some fiscal contraction to minimise the extent to which interest rates have to increase. Hopefully that won't be too contentious a statement, but I suspect otherwise. All right, I'm just about out of time, so I'll go to, very quickly, global issues. Again, this issue of conflict, real economic fundamentals versus crazy financial market stuff. And I'll let other people deal with that because I just don't understand what the hell's going on. Couple of brief points. Looking at monthly share index, quite volatile, particularly since September 07. So this is the last year. And that volatility is highlighted by this volatility index. And this is one of those charts where they used to have them in game stores and stuff. You stare at the chart for long enough and a picture emerges for you. This one is actually a series of smiles. And the smiles are of roughly four-year duration. And what it shows is that we almost got the corner of a mouth in mid-06, and we should have got one because that would have been about 4 years, but we didn't. And we lasted another 2 years, and guess what? Bang, it hit us harder by virtue of extension of that cycle of volatility. That's one of the reasons why I think financial market stuff is crazy. Fundamentals. The fundamentals are good. You know, go back over a long-run period, and the share market has provided a pretty good long-run investment. Volatility also being translated through to the dollar by virtue of some of that financial market instability and overreaction, which again I flagged last year in saying that financial markets usually react late and overreact. And I think that's exactly what we've seen. Fundamentals, trade, WA trade by destination, just under a quarter is going to China, another 20% to Japan, substantial amount then to Europe, South Korea, India. So they're our key trading partners. Key question is, what's going to happen in China? Chinese exports by destination. US accounts for around 20%. Europe, far more substantial as an export destination. And I think also we need to think about the interaction between financial markets and whether or not the kind of fear in the financial sector actually becomes, if you like, self-fulfilling in the real economy. It shouldn't, based on the fundamentals, I guess is the message. But those crazy financial markets people could cause us grief. Reflecting the fact that it shouldn't in the fundamentals, the outlook for world growth in both output and trade is pretty good, pretty stable, as you can see there. And China is a big part of that and is a big share of the world economy now. Although we're doing some work at the moment and there's some revaluation happening in people's measurement of the size of some of their developing economies and whether or not they're actually as big as was thought. I think that's, in some respects, academic. I think in terms of fundamentals, what is clearly evident from China and a visit to China is that the productivity potential in that economy is just immense. As the economy develops and grows and picks up technology, as capital investment flows, the growth that we're going to see there over a long period of time is quite outstanding, as reflected by the way they kind of do things at the moment. I'll pretty much wrap up there, other than to say last year I raised the issue of Indigenous outcomes and, if you like, the shameful state of Indigenous outcomes, that it's not just a government problem, it's not just an Indigenous people's problem, but that we should be doing something about it. I did a few bits and pieces through the year, which I learned a lot. I hope that out of last year's talk, you reflected on it a bit. One of the things that I came to the conclusion, and it was from the words of this elder, as opposed to me being a Treasury officer, who said, money's not the answer. Money's not going to fix any of this. So it was interesting to hear that from someone who knows what's going on the ground, if you like. But the amazing thing and the encouraging thing out of today and out of the Prime Minister's speech is that hopefully we have a new opportunity to move forward. Out of last year's one, actually, someone brought me an article and said, read this, you'll find it interesting. And it was an article on some communities in the north and about the incidence of alcohol abuse and what that does in terms of family dysfunction and so on and so on and so on. And it was, you know, a pretty grim portrayal of what was going on or what was revealed through last year. What was even more grim was the article was in a Reader's Digest, discovered in a doctor's surgery and was written in 1991, and nothing had changed. 17 years later, nothing had changed. So hopefully today's speech gives us, not this one, because this will pale into insignificance, obviously, hopefully the Prime Minister's speech will give us opportunity to reflect on how we go forward. And one of the things I was lucky enough to experience firsthand was the richness of Indigenous culture in this country, and something that I think if we don't embrace it, we are really missing out on something very special. All right, enough about that. Takeaways for today: capacity constraints will continue to determine our growth prospects. Capital works and strategically mapped out capital works will be crucial. The state has a state infrastructure strategy quietly ticking away in the background, which we'll see in a few months. And reforms are crucial as well. I mentioned the production possibility frontier. The only way to grow beyond that is to move the frontier. Reforms and capital investment are the key to moving that frontier. Interest rates or tax cuts, it's a tough call, and I think that's something that needs to be well and truly thought through. Managing the state finances, it'll continue to involve mutually exclusive events. Giving up income, spending on services. Hands up if someone here doesn't want the world's best health system. Anyone? Hands up if you don't want your kids in world quality education facilities. Hands up if you don't want police on the beat looking after you, keeping you safe. Those are the choices. Financial volatility will continue, I think, to mask robust fundamentals. The risk is that volatility will start to undermine the fundamentals. But if we all stay focused on the long run and the fundamentals, then I think the prospects for the state remain very strong. Brutus is going well, just, you know, by the by. His expectations are being managed quite well. And in amongst all the conflict and variables and so on, as I said, I think the outlook is very positive indeed. Thank you very much.